Welcome to Base by Base. You know, type 2 diabetes, it affects what, over 500 million people globally? It's a huge challenge.
Massive. And anyone close to it knows how, well, varied it is.
Exactly. It just doesn't impact everyone the same way. And that makes treating it effectively really difficult. A one-size-fits-all approach often falls short.
That variation, the heterogeneity, that's probably the single biggest hurdle. We need to understand the specifics happening within each person, not just slap on a label.
Totally agree. And that's what we're exploring today, a really fascinating study that seems to offer a path towards understanding that complexity right down at the molecular level.
It does. It's about getting a much more detailed map, specifically by looking inside skeletal muscle,
which is crucial for blood sugar control.
Precisely. So the source material is a scientific article formally titled Personalized Molecular Signatures of Insulin Resistance and Type 2 Diabetes. It was led by first author Dr. Jeppe Kurgard and colleagues, including Ben Stocks, John Henderson, and senior authors Anna Crook and Atul S. Deshmukh.
And published where?
Published in the journal Cell in 2025.
Cell. Okay. Top tier.
Yeah.
And focusing on skeletal muscle, why there specifically?
Well, it's just fundamentally important. It's the main place your body takes up glucose from your blood, especially after you eat, when insulin gives the signal.
So if your muscle isn't listening to insulin properly.
That's insulin resistance right there. Your blood sugar control goes haywire. So you have to study muscle to get at the root of this.
Makes perfect sense. So the study's main goal, or hypothesis perhaps, was to see if they could find specific molecular differences within muscle.
Yes, and link those differences directly to how insulin sensitive an individual actually is physiologically.
Not just whether they have a T2D diagnosis, but their actual level of sensitivity.
Exactly. Moving beyond those broad categories to get a personalized molecular fingerprint that reflects that biological spectrum.
Okay, so how did Dr. Kurgard and the team approach this? It sounds incredibly complex. What were the methods?
They use some really powerful omics technologies, specifically proteomics, which means studying essentially all the proteins in a muscle sample.
The types an ounce.
Right. And crucially, phosphoproteomics.
Okay, phosphoproteomics, what does that add?
That looks at phosphorylation, these tiny chemical tags, phosphate groups that get added to proteins. They act like switches, turning proteins on or off or changing their function. It gives you a snapshot of protein activity, not just presence.
Got it. So a deeper layer of information. And what kind of samples did they use?
They analyzed skeletal muscle biopsies, small samples of muscle tissue from over 120 individuals.
Men and women.
Yes, men and women. And importantly, these people spanned a wide range of insulin sensitivity, from normal glucose tolerance, or NGT, to individuals diagnosed with a type 2 diabetes.
So a real spectrum. And they didn't just look at the molecules, right? They pair this with clinical data.
That's key. They performed what they called deep in vivo phenotyping. It means really detailed measurements on each person, things like fasting glucose, HbA1c, that's your average blood sugar over months.
Standard clinical stuff?
Yes, and fasting insulin, HMA1IR, which is an estimate of resistance. But the really critical part was the hyperinsulinemic euglycemic clamp.
Ah, the clamp.
Yeah.
That's the gold standard measurement, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It's a very controlled physiological test. You infuse insulin at a steady rate.
Like simulating after a meal.
Sort of, yeah, a steady high level. And then you infuse glucose at the same time, adjusting the glucose infusion rate constantly to keep the person's blood sugar perfectly stable, right, at a normal level.
Okay.
The amount of glucose you need to infuse to maintain that stability, that rate called the M value, is a direct measure of how effectively the body, mostly the muscles, is taking up glucose in response to that insulin.
So it quantifies insulin sensitivity very precisely.
Extremely precisely. It cuts through other variations. So by having this M value for each person alongside their detailed muscle proteome and phosphoproteome data,
they could directly link specific molecular patterns to actual measured insulin sensitivity. That's powerful.
It really is. Personalized molecular data tied directly to physiological function.
Okay, let's get into the results because this is where it gets fascinating. One of the big findings was about the muscle before insulin stimulation, right? In the fasted state.
Yes, that was quite striking. They found that the state of the muscle proteome and phosphoproteome, just baseline, before any acute insulin challenge was strongly predictive of a person's whole body insulin sensitivity, their M value.
So the muscle's resting state already tells you a lot. That seems counterintuitive almost.
It does, because we often focus on the response to insulin. But this shows the baseline molecular landscape holds significant predictive power about how the muscle is primed to respond later.
And how predictive was it? Compared to, say, just knowing if someone has T2D.
Kit, these fasting molecular signatures were actually better predictors of the M value, of the actual insulin sensitivity, than knowing the T2D diagnosis, or even standard markers like fasting glucose or HbA1c.
Wow. So the molecules tell a more accurate story about the underlying physiology than the clinical label does.
That's what this suggests. It really highlights the heterogeneity within diagnostic groups. You can have two people with T2D, but very different underlying muscle molecular profiles and sensitivity levels. The fasting state captures that nuance.
So what specific results did they find in that fasted state proteome? What proteins were linked to sensitivity?
They identified 136 protein associations with the M value in the fasted state. Proteins that were positively correlated with insulin sensitivity, meaning higher levels in more sensitive people, were often involved in efficient energy metabolism.
Like what?
Things related to oxidative phosphorylation, the main way cells generate energy using oxygen, and also fatty acid degradation, breaking down fats for fuel.
So better fuel-burning machinery seems linked to better sensitivity.
Yeah.
Makes sense. What about proteins linked to resistance?
Conversely, proteins found at higher levels in more insulin-resistant individuals were linked to pathways maybe less explored in this context. Things like the proteasome and ubiquitin system, which deals with protein turnover and recycling.
Breaking down old proteins.
Exactly. And also pathways like Wnt signaling and adrenergic signaling. It suggests maybe altered protein management or other signaling pathways could be involved early in resistance.
Interesting. And they address the mitochondria question, too.
Yeah.
The cell's power plants.
Yes, that's been debated. Does T2D cause fewer mitochondria or vice versa? They found that total mitochondrial protein abundance did correlate positively with insulin sensitivity. More sensitive people tended to have more mitochondrial proteins.
Okay.
But crucially, when they just compared the average NGT group versus the average T2D group, there wasn't a statistically significant difference in total mitochondrial abundance.
So it's more tightly linked to the degree of sensitivity rather than just the T2D diagnosis itself.
That seems to be the finding here. It's a subtle but important distinction. It suggests the link is more with the physiological state of sensitivity than the clinical category.
And they saw a metabolic preference shift, too.
Yes, looking at the ratio of two enzymes, LDHA and LDHB. This ratio kind of reflects whether the muscle prefers anaerobic glycolysis or more efficient oxidative metabolism. A higher proportion favoring oxidative metabolism was strongly associated with higher insulin sensitivity.
So even without insulin present, the muscle's protein profile reflects its fuel handling setup and predicts sensitivity. What about the phosphorylation tags in the fasted state? Any key results there?
Definitely. They found 118 phosphocytes associated with the M value in the fasted state. Interestingly, that was actually more sites than were associated with the acute response to insulin later.
Wow, more predictive sites at baseline.
It seems so, emphasizing the importance of that resting state. And using computational analysis, they predicted which kinase pathways might be responsible.
Kinases being the enzymes that add the phosphate tags.
Correct. Their analysis pointed towards increased activity of the JNK-P38 pathway being associated with insulin resistance.
And that pathway is linked to inflammation.
Yeah. Yes, it's often associated with cellular stress and inflammation. This provides molecular evidence linking that pathway activity to resistance in human muscle specifically.
Was there one particular phosphocyte that stood out?
There was one standout. The phosphocyte showing the absolute strongest association with insulin resistance, meaning higher phosphorylation in more resistant individuals, was on a protein called AMPK3 at a specific location, serine 65, or S65.
AMPK3-S65. And what's so special about that one?
Here's a really fascinating detail. When they compared this protein sequence across species, they found that this specific S65 phosphorylation site on AMPK3 appears to be unique to Homo sapiens.
Unique to humans, not found in, say, chimpanzees.
Exactly. That's what their analysis showed. A human-specific phosphorylation site strongly linked to insulin resistance.
That feels potentially very significant. Did they figure out what might be phosphorylating it?
Their kinase prediction analysis suggested an enzyme called MAPPTP2, which itself is activated by that JNKP38 pathway they link to resistance. So it connects back to the inflammation stress pathway.
A plausible mechanism. And did they test the function?
They did some initial cell culture experiments. Silencing the AMPK3 gene in muscle cells actually enhanced glucose incorporation into glycogen, which suggests AMPK3 plays a role in insulin action. Though the specific role of phosphorylating that S65 site needs more direct investigation.
Okay, so the fasted state is packed with predictive information, protein levels reflecting fuel use, protein turnover, inflammatory pathway activity, and even a human-specific phosphocyte strongly linked to resistance. Amazing baseline data. What happens when insulin does arrive? How did this signaling response look?
Right, the next step. They stimulated muscle samples with insulin and looked at the phosphoproteome changes. They identified 243 phosphocytes that were regulated by insulin.
And what was the key takeaway about the signaling response in resistant individuals?
Perhaps the most crucial finding here was that insulin resistance doesn't mean the entire signaling pathway just shuts down. It's not an all-or-nothing failure.
So some parts still work even in severe resistance?
Yes. They showed many core insulin signaling events were actually preserved. For example, phosphorylation of well-known targets downstream of the main AKT kinase.
Like Connie.
Like GSK3 at site S9 and TBC1D4 at T642. These sites still showed increased phosphorylation in response to insulin pretty much across the board, regardless of how insulin resistant the person was.
So the central AKT pathway isn't completely broken, even in resistance.
It appears largely functional for these specific outputs, yes.
Then where is the impairment? If the main pathway seems okay, what's different in resistant muscle?
The impairments seem to be more selective. Their data showed that other branches or downstream effects of insulin signaling were highly coupled to insulin sensitivity. Specifically, phosphorylation sites on substrates of the MTOR pathway.
MTOR. That's involved in growth and metabolism, too.
Exactly. Sites like EIF4EBP1T70 and RPTRS863 showed phosphorylation responses that were much more strongly correlated with the person's M value, their level of resistance.
Ah, so it's not that all insulin signaling fails, but specific branches downstream are selectively blunted or impaired in resistant individuals.
Precisely. It paints a picture of selective insulin resistance, where some signals get through, but others, perhaps those particularly mediated by MTO in this case, are significantly weakened depending on the degree of resistance. It's much more complex than a simple broken pathway.
That nuance is critical. The study also explored sex differences, didn't it? We know metabolism differs between sexes.
They did, and they found quite substantial differences in the baseline muscle proteome and phosphoproteome between the men and the post-perimenopausal women in their cohort.
How substantial?
Pretty significant. They identified 110 proteins and 343 phosphocytes that showed statistically significant differences in abundance or phosphorylation levels between males and females at baseline.
Wow. What kind of differences were they seeing?
Broadly, they aligned with known metabolic tendencies. Males tended to have higher levels of proteins involved in glucose metabolism and oxidative phosphorylation.
Burning sugar and energy production.
Right. Females, on the other hand, had higher levels of proteins associated with lipid uptake and storage, handling fats, so distinct baseline molecular profiles in muscle.
Okay, different starting points. But what about the molecular signatures linked to insulin resistance itself? Did those differ between men and women?
And this was another really interesting finding. Despite those major baseline differences in their muscle machinery, the specific molecular signatures, the proteins and phosphocytes that were associated with insulin sensitivity, the M value, and also the patterns of phosphocytes changing in acute response to insulin, those were largely similar between men and women.
Really? So even though men's and women's muscles might be set up differently at baseline,
the molecular pathways or changes associated with becoming insulin resistant seem to be conserved, shared between the sexes, based on this data.
That suggests the core mechanisms of muscle insulin resistance might be fundamentally the same, despite different baseline metabolic strategies.
That's a key implication, yes. It hints that potential therapeutic targets related to these resistance signatures might be effective across sexes.
Do they look at why those baseline sex differences exist? Genetics, hormones.
They did a quick check on the genetics. They found that very few of the proteins that differed significantly between men and women were actually encoded on the X chromosome.
So it's not primarily driven by X-linked genes.
It seems not. This points more towards hormonal regulation and differences in the regulation of autosomal genes on the other chromosomes as the main drivers of these sex-specific baseline molecular landscapes in muscle.
Okay, let's try to bring all these results together. We have detailed molecular maps for muscle linked to precise sensitivity measures. What's the big picture implication for tackling type 2 diabetes? for personalized medicine.
I think the clearest message is the critical importance of understanding this biological heterogeneity at the molecular level. Linking these detailed omics profiles directly to the physiological phenotype, the M value, the actual insulin sensitivity is key.
It moves us beyond just the T2D diagnosis category.
Precisely. It strongly supports the need for diagnostics and, ultimately, treatments that are tailored to an individual's specific molecular profile and their degree of insulin resistance, not just a blanket approach for everyone diagnosed with TTD.
Are there specific targets highlighted by this study that look particularly promising for future therapies?
Well, the pathways implicated are definitely interesting. The association with the JNKP38 stress inflammation pathway warrants more investigation.
And that human-specific site?
Yes, that AMPK3S65 phosphosite is particularly intriguing. For one, it's strongly associated with resistance. And second, the AMPK3 protein isoform is predominantly expressed in skeletal muscle.
Ah, so targeting it might be more muscle-specific.
Potentially, yes. That could mean fewer off-target effects compared to targeting pathways active in many tissues. So it represents a potentially druggable node that's muscle-enriched and relevant to human insulin resistance. Needs much more work, of course, but it's a fascinating lead.
Absolutely. Now, as with all good science, the authors acknowledged limitations, right? What should we keep in mind?
Yes, they were clear about that. Firstly, this is an associative study. It finds strong links, correlations between molecules and sensitivity, but it doesn't definitively prove causation. Experimental work is needed to confirm if changing these molecules causes changes in sensitivity.
Correlation doesn't equal causation, the classic reminder.
Exactly. Also, while the cohort size, over 120 people, is substantial for this depth of molecular analysis, it still might not capture the entire vast spectrum of human variability in T2D and insulin resistance.
There could be other patterns out there.
Potentially. And by focusing on signatures common across individuals or between sexes, they might miss some rarer or more subtle subgroup-specific mechanisms.
And it didn't directly integrate genetics or lifestyle factors.
No, this study focused specifically on the proteome and phosphoproteome in relation to the physiological phenotype. Genetics, diet, physical activity, all crucial factors weren't part of this particular analysis, though they obviously contribute to the overall picture.
And finally, specific sites like that AMPK3S65 need more validation.
Definitely. More in vivo functional work is needed to really pin down the precise role of that specific phosphorylation event in muscle glucose metabolism and insulin action.
Okay, so to summarize this fascinating exploration.
This research really showcases the power of using advanced omics, proteomics, and phosphoproteomics in muscle tissue and linking that deep molecular data directly to gold standard physiological measures like the M value from the clamp.
It gives us a much more personalized, high-resolution view of insulin resistance.
Yes, showing that the muscle's molecular state, even just at baseline in the fasted state, holds powerful predictive information about insulin sensitivity. It goes way beyond a simple diagnostic label.
And crucially, it reframes insulin resistance not as a total system failure, but as a selective impairment, where specific signaling pathways are affected differently.
Exactly. Understanding that selective nature and the specific molecular players involved, like JNKP38 or AMPK3S65, opens doors for potentially more targeted and personalized strategies in the future.
It really drives home the need to understand the individual's biology. Which leaves us with a provocative thought for you listening. If this kind of deep molecular mapping can reveal such heterogeneity and specific targets within a complex disease like type 2 diabetes, what could similar approaches mean for other varied conditions?
Could mapping your personal molecular landscape in relevant tissues become a cornerstone of future preventative health and truly personalized treatment plans?
Something to ponder. It certainly feels like a glimpse into a more precise future for medicine.
A very exciting possibility.
This exploration is based on an open access article under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License, CC BY 4.0. You'll find the DOI and a link to the license in the episode description.